Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
It's time again for the Media Project, your chance for some commentary, analysis, and even a little insight into the media issues of the week. Your regular host, Times Union editor Rex Smith, is away this week, so this is Mike Spain, a longtime associate editor at the Times Union, now retired, filling in for my former boss today. I'm here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the noted political scientist and commentator who is president and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio, from where this program originates today. Hello, Alan.
Hello, and I can't wait to see Pete Seeger and for all of you who are listening to this in their region on May the 3rd at the Lyndon Norris Auditorium right here in Albany. You won't see Pete, but you will see Happy Traum, who will be channeling Pete better than anybody I know. We'll all be singing together. It'll be great.
Will you sing Newspaper Men Make Such Interesting People?
I doubt it.
Also with us today are two veteran journalists in New York's Capital Region who are now working to train the next generation of communicators. They are Dr. Kaylin Brown, who's chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose in Albany. Welcome.
Hello.
And Barbara Lombardo, the former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record newspapers, who is a professor of journalism at the University of Albany. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Well, the story that continues to dominate the news this week is the fallout from the Mueller report and the redacted version of the more than 400-page report that investigated Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. Of particular concern to journalists are the troubling revelations about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report detailed several instances in which, in her official capacity, Sanders flagrantly lied to the media and the American public. For example, after the firing of FBI Director James Comey back in May of 2017, Sanders claimed on two occasions that she heard from, quote, countless current and former agents of the rank and file of the FBI who had lost confidence in Director Comey. But when she was questioned by Mr. Mueller's office, she admitted under oath that this was untrue, or rather that it had been a slip of the tongue made in the heat of the moment. This all comes as yet another record was broken this week for the longest dry period, 43 days, without an official news media briefing at the White House. These were once daily press briefings where journalists would get information and background and guidance on how to cover administration policy. Now they're happening maybe once every 5 or 6 weeks. And even when they happen, they're just abrupt and combative. Her credibility is being called moot now after the revelations in the Mueller report. And some people are even calling on her to resign. Dr. Chartok?
Well, the first thing I can say is that we know that this president tells more lies than Ms. Huckabee Sanders ever thought of telling. You know, he's got 10,000 lies on his record, something like that now. Washington Post adds them up. And she goes out there and does what she's told. Of that, there is no question. So she wants the job. She gets to keep it. It's very unattractive, I can say that.
Is it appropriate for the press, members of the media, to call for the resignation of the White House spokesperson?
I don't know. I mean, that's a very interesting question. Look, we do know one thing that this president does, which is to try to inflame his base by having prominent enemies. And one of his prominent enemies, as a class, is the press. Look, Joe Biden, as we speak, is coming into the race. He's leading in the polls, a snapshot, as we always say, in a particular time. But he's only leading the president in this country by 8 percentage points. 8. That's nothing, really. It's going to be a close election. I'd rather be leading by 8 than not lead at all, as the old saying goes. But, yeah, and so he may be onto something. Look, every time we see a poll about the press and the credibility of the press, it isn't good.
Well, Mike's question about whether or not it's appropriate for the media to call for the resignation of Sanders is interesting because that doesn't usually happen. They have deviated in making that call. Yeah. I can understand why they would, but it seems sort of specious. I mean, clearly Sanders is working for Allen, what you said, a person who does not adhere to the truth at all. So it makes perfect sense that she is not adhering to the truth either, and that she would utter complete fabrications in front of the press and to the press with no evidence to back it up. I think whether or not she maintains her job or not is a little bit irrelevant. I think the press takes her with a grain of salt. New York Magazine, we had Olivia Nunzi covers the White House there, and she said, Sanders never should have been relied on, and she should not be relied on now.
Yes, so. I would say, having just wrapped up the Passover holiday, Manashtano Halayla Hazem Mikol Halelot. Which means, why should this night be different than all other nights? Why should we suddenly be shocked that Sarah Sanders or anybody associated with the Trump campaign is telling lies? I do think, though, it goes a little too far to have a reporter say that she should be fired for telling lies. I would agree with the person that you just referenced, Kaylin, and Nicholas Kristof, one of my heroes at the New York Times. He talked about, in reference to this issue, how he had to cover Beijing for years, and you know that they're lying every day to you. So you report what they say, but then you try to tell the truth. So you're not reporting it as fact. You're reporting, here's what they said, and then you work like the devil to try to report what is true.
Now, you know, I write 2 columns every week, and I have for a long, long time. And there is one truth about writing columns that I think you all know. It keeps coming around. So, you know, you scratch your head and you say, what happened this week? What rises to the top? What's provocative? And quite frequently you say, well, there's Sanders doing her thing and she should be criticized. If it's an official position by a journalist who is writing fact every day, I think that's different than a columnist.
Well, it's getting to the point where some journalists are referring to her as another Ron Ziegler. You may remember that name.
Sure.
During the Watergate
debacle. He worked for Tricky.
He was the spokesperson for Richard Nixon. Well, in another story that's getting a lot of discussion in media circles, and it has to do with something said to you last week, Alan, by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Yep.
In discussing a story in the New York Times with you on WAMC, it had to do with the deteriorating relationship Cuomo had with Andy Byford, the head of the New York Transit Authority. The two men had not spoken since January. Cuomo disputed the story, but confirmed part of it, that the two were not speaking at least. And then he attacked the New York Times and used the term sad, the same term President Trump uses to describe the Times, which
yes.
Trump also calls the enemy of the people. And then Cuomo said, they have to sell newspapers. I understand that. Why haven't I spoken to the New York City transit head since January? Because I was in Albany negotiating the budget. Alan?
A little lame, I thought. He was in Albany, but he also was in New York City, and he's also at home. And I think he was angry at the Times. He thought they took a shot at him that was not appropriate. Nevertheless, the first thing I thought when those words came out of his mouth was, hey, this sounds very Trumpian to me. They're just interested in, quote, selling newspapers, and they're just interested in the clicks that they get on their stories. Look, I have great respect for Andrew Cuomo and what he's done, but I think this was not his finest moment.
I agree with you. I also think that the choice to run what is characterized as a column in the Washington Post by the governor, but reads as a series of, I think it was about 35 questions.
Yeah.
From a journalistic perspective, you know, journalists' obligations are to provide answers, not keep asking questions. We ask questions behind the scenes. So it read the column to me as a rant, and it did not move the conversation forward. Lamenting all the degradation of society now in that valuable real estate, which is the press, to me is a wasted opportunity. If you have something to say, Governor Cuomo, tell us how to fix these things or suggest policy issues that would improve the circumstances rather than attacking, attacking is part of the problem. And he should recognize that because that is what is said in that Washington Post series of questions.
Well, on the other hand, it did get that posture, got Donald Trump elected president of the United States. He may be taking a page out of that.
Which would be ironic because he's criticizing that, isn't he? He's questioning the governor. Why would we use Twitter or rely on Twitter as even a platform with any reliability? But simultaneously, he wrote a series of questions. What are the sorts of content you would see on Twitter?
And on the other hand, I saw our friend Chris Churchill, who I have immense respect for, and who is a very bright guy and a columnist for the Times Union. I saw him answer those 35 questions.
Right, he had a list in this week's column about 35 questions he had for Governor Cuomo. Kind of tongue-in-cheek, but a very provocative column that will be widely read, I'm sure, around the second floor of the Capitol in Albany.
He was very funny. I mean, at one point, I think he said, maybe when he got around to 16, why am I doing this?
Yeah. So, Barbara, is it something editors get used to, being beat up by politicians?
I would say yes, that you have to develop a thick skin. Just at an open house for prospective journalism majors at UAlbany, and one of the things that was discussed, there was a panel of journalism graduates who have worked in journalism and in other fields. And one of the things that they definitely touched on was getting used to getting beat up. And I can remember that as a reporter, too. Reporter and then as an editor and managing editor, that you have to develop a thick skin.
I've told this story 6,000 times, so maybe 6,001 would be appropriate. There I am talking to a service organization. I don't remember the Rotary or who it was, but I think in Menands. Maybe that's not even true. But it was somewhere down there, and somebody says, why is Papa Cuomo? Because at the time I was interviewing Papa Cuomo on the radio all the time. Why is Papa Cuomo always picking on the press? I said, let me ask you a question. For all of you, you're all important people. Raise your hand if you've had anything to do with the press in the last year. Every hand in the room goes up. I say, okay, put your hand down if you were satisfied with this story. No hands go down. So in other words, people who are covered can always do better than the reporter did in their own minds.
Right. The closer you are to a story, the more you know that it's not totally accurate a lot of the times. I remember that there was one time when Mary Caroline Powers used to be
right.
on TV.
Great journalist.
And I was lucky to have her working with us at the Saratogian for about 10 years. She and I went to speak together to some local nonprofit organization where they were not that happy with us. And we purposely borrowed two bulletproof vests from the police department and wore them, took it off our jackets.
Externally.
And we were ready.
Superman.
So we were ready to get their jabs.
Well, a little humor can sometimes just, you know, take some of the air out of the conflict that goes on.
But you wish the politicians could handle it that way, too.
You wish. Well, I just want to remind you that you're listening to The Media Project, a presentation of Northeast Public Radio. And with us today are Dr. Alan Chartok, Dr. Kaylin Brown, Barbara Lombardo, and I'm Mike Spain. How about a letter from one of the listeners of this program? Hi, Mediaites. I love your last show. The discussions were all interesting and edifying. I want to let you know that when I heard the segment on Noom, I had exactly the same reaction as either Barbara or Judy. That would be Judy Patrick. I was interrupted for the beginning of the discussion, so I didn't hear the original listener letter who was speaking. In other words, I too thought NPR was doing an infomercial, although I agree there was a bit more journalism at the end. Thank you for all you do. Signed, Anne. So I just thought I'd get that in. Another story that's been in the news this week has to do with Gannett, the chain of 100 newspapers, including USA Today and the USA Today Network. They're defending their approach to journalism at the national and local level. For more than a decade now, newspapers, all newspapers around the country, have been offering buyouts and cutting staff. Every time you turn around, somebody's doing it. Gannett is no exception. In the last 10 years, according to the Pew Charitable Trust, the number of newspapers, newspaper newsroom employees has shriveled by 45%. At Gannett, the company says while it's been aggressively reducing staff and costs, it's also taken a deliberate approach to protect and prioritize investigative journalism. So while it downsizes, it starts throwing more resources at investigative reporting. The national team works with the local team. But critics say that this has decimated the day-to-day local coverage, opening the door to corruption by local officials who no longer have a watchdog.
And who's covering the school boards? And who's going to the community meetings that need to be done, Mike?
Yeah, well, when you have to make decisions like that, what do you do as an editor?
Well, concerning Gannett, they are deciding to pool and streamline their resources to focus more on the investigative journalism,
sure,
because they see that as a way that they can make an impact, and they have had an impact. But also they can do some deeper diving on those stories, you know, by digging into facts so that we have more full and explanatory pieces from Gannett. Though you're right, we are still missing out on coverage of local government, which is an emergency situation now. If we do not have coverage of local government, what might our local government be doing?
You know, I'm fascinated by the fact that we heard from Barbara Lombardo that she went to talk to prospective journalism majors. And I'm wondering, do they think about this stuff? In other words, they say, hey, they're dropping all these jobs. Why should I go into journalism when, in fact, there's a very good chance that there won't be a job for me?
Many of our students from St. Rose are getting jobs in journalism. You can see Jackson Wang on the air over at Spectrum News. We just had another student get a job there.
Hey, there's
our students are getting jobs in journalism around the country.
Hey, there's an old Yiddish expression for example stinks. Just because one person or two persons or 10 people get jobs, we know the stats which you guys have both given are real, which is they're cutting jobs.
There are jobs being cut, but new ones are being formed. If you look on journalismjobs.com or Media Bistro, you will see an array of jobs around the country and abroad for journalism. Journalism is changing. There are more online platforms, and those platforms offer so many opportunities for journalism students.
Wait, Caleb. I want to ask you a question, and this is what we call an honesty question, because you don't want to answer an honesty question any other way but honestly,
yes,
because otherwise a lightning bolt will come out of the sky.
Okay.
Here, so you have to be careful about that.
Yes.
So are you telling me, and us, all of us who are listening to this program right now, that there are more jobs in journalism now because there are some new ones than there used to be?
There are different jobs in journalism.
No, that's not the question.
I'm not saying more. No, I'm not saying more.
Well,
I'm saying there are different jobs.
Perhaps newsroom positions at traditional newspapers have been eroded, but new jobs have come up in social media for new kinds of businesses, online businesses, entrepreneurial businesses, in some cases not-for-profits. But is that going to fill the gap? Is that going to keep the eye on the local school board? Is that going to keep the eye on the local planning board? I mean, you had to deal with it, Barbara. You saw, as an editor, any editor would see their staff dwindle over the last 10 years.
Yes, and for many years, when I started my career at the Saratogian, it was a Gannett-owned paper, and it was a Gannett-owned paper for many years. And it ultimately was sold to the company that is now trying to take over Gannett and decimate Gannett. And I would mention that on May 16th, there's a shareholders meeting for Gannett Co. Inc. And I know this as a journalist, a former Gannett employee, and a full disclosure, I own some Gannett stock still.
How's it doing?
I guess they're doing well because they're cutting people, so they must be doing well.
Right.
The problem is that MNG, the company that wants to take them over, will totally decimate that company. So if we think that Gannett is not doing all that we wish it would be doing for its local outlets, for reporting the local news, things will get a million times worse if people get sucked into supporting MNG over keeping the Gannett Board of Directors. So there's a serious issue at stake. And there's not necessarily a winner, because even under Gannett, you're still losing staffers, losing local coverage.
Now, you've been watching Gannett for a long time, obviously, closer than we have, because, you know, you were of it and with it. So my question to you would be, have they acted in the right way in terms of their own issues, their own mission? When I say that, I don't care that much. I know what the answer is in journalism. Basically, perhaps we don't care. Good journalism. But they kept buying newspapers. And that's something that I didn't quite understand. Why are you buying newspapers when, in fact, with one hand, you're eliminating staff with the other?
I mean, it's all about money. And
the economy of scale, I guess. Yeah.
Yes, and when you're reporting to shareholders by growing.
Well, this may sound obsequious to my former employer, but my favorite newspaper, the Times Union in Albany, New York, right now seems to be doing some really solid investigative journalism all the time. and they have not abandoned covering local news. But it's tough. I mean, if you listen to the latest words and disturbing predictions from Warren Buffett, one of the world's richest and smartest people.
And a pro-newspaper guy.
Right. He owns newspaper. Mm-hmm. He owns the Buffalo News and the Omaha World Herald and has been buying newspapers in the last few years. He is predicting a very bleak outlook for newspapers. He's saying the newspaper industry, in many respects, newspapers are toast and most of them cannot be saved. He does say some of the big papers will survive, like he names the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal. He did this in an interview with Yahoo Finance, which is an online news agency, which is interesting that he would say it there. But if Warren Buffett is worried about the future of newspapers, I think we all have to worry. And the transition, like every transition, will be a rough one. And I think the public is the one that's going to lose out.
Now, not to give you a hard time, Mike, but you did just say that the Times Union was your favorite newspaper. Is that more than the Washington Post, more than the Times, the New York Times?
I confess, yes.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a
yes. Okay. Yes, but I think you're right, Mike, that the Times Union does... It shows that they make a concerted effort to do in-depth reporting on important issues locally and localizing important national issues. What's missing is the outreach to the smaller towns and covering the school boards, the town boards.
Unquestionably, there's not as much of that, and that is where people lose out. So community journalism has taken a hit. It takes it everywhere, and it's tough. And as a former editor at the Times Union, I know the pain of having to deal with diminishing advertising revenue that supports the newsroom operations. But some seem to be handling it better than others, and we'll just have to see who are going to be the survivors. And as Warren Buffett predicts, many newspapers are just going to be toast.
And when we look at Buffett, Alan, if I might just add, I wonder when he talks about newspapers, if he literally is referencing the hard copy, because I think most of us understand that the hard copy newspaper probably is not long for this world, obviously. But that doesn't mean that there won't be news organizations still delivering that same content.
Not true.
Right. So I just think that's an important distinction. Yes, most people would agree the paper product will go away. So do we need new language to characterize newspapers?
Well,
I know some say media organization.
Well, Professor, yes. I do think, though, that when Warren Buffett's talking, one of the greatest investor in the United States, he's talking about the bottom line. He's not talking about whether it's online or whether it's paper. He's talking about whether these news organizations are going to be alive.
Yeah.
I assume that's what he meant as well, although we learn as journalists never to assume. So that if he is talking about print newspapers, sure, we all think that's where we're heading. But I fear that he's talking about the bigger picture, that news organizations won't be
I'd like to share Kaylin's optimism that as we get through this transition, new positions will continue to emerge where journalists can ply their trade. I think the not-for-profit, intentional not-for-profit model may take over for online news organizations. It already has in some places. Some may still print some copies and they'll also distribute online. And it's evolving very quickly. And hopefully there'll be room in there for solid local community journalism to make a difference in communities. We have a few minutes left, and this week, Joe Biden announced that he's getting into the race. You mentioned it earlier, Alan. I'd like to go back to that. Has the media been fair to Joe Biden? We've had recent allegations by some women that they felt uncomfortable by the way he hugged them or touched them. And over the years, he's made faux pas, misstatements that have been listed frequently recently as his campaign was about to make the announcement that was made this week that he's in the race for the president.
I want you to know that I don't think the media has always been fair to him, but then I don't think the news media is fair to everybody. Clearly, the negative stories get more readership than the positive ones. What are you going to do, write a story and say how wonderful the guy is? They're not going to do that. We all know that. But on the other hand, I think you have to go rent, if it's possible to do that, or look for the candidate with Robert Redford, in which the sagacious advice is given, get all the garbage out in the beginning before you even begin. And then later on in the campaign, somebody raises their, well, we handled all of that before. So when you're talking about the touchy-feely thing, he apologized. He said there are new norms. He's going to live with them. I heard them trying to raise it on National Public Radio or one of those places, and it didn't work. Say, oh, yeah, well, we know about all of that. He's already apologized. Now, I do think that Biden is the front runner. We know that from the polls, which are snapshots, as I've said. And he is clearly out in the lead. So the name of the game for him is going to be to maintain the lead. And if there's one thing I can tell you about the newspapers, they don't like leaders. They like to destroy them.
Has the media been fair, Barbara?
Wow. I wish I'd done more homework to be able to give you documented evidence of fairness or unfairness. I think that with any of the candidates who come forward, especially Joe Biden, you're going to hear, Zalin said, you're going to hear the negative. You're going to hear about how old, you know, has his time passed? How old is he? Has the touchy-feely thing, is that going to hurt him? Of his positions, right, on Anita Hill and the like, is that going to come back to haunt him? As opposed to, it could be saying, hey, we have a guy coming into the race who's got more experience, who's been a vice president. So the tone of him coming in could be different instead of posing questions. But our job is to, well, Caitlin said not just to pose questions, but also to provide answers, or for columnists to provide answers.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel kind of torn about it. Maybe because I'm also imposing my own personal and projecting my own feelings about, is he too old? Is there fresher blood in there? But those are questions as a journalist that I think need to be raised.
Concerning the fairness question, I look to a mashup of videos of Biden and what is being characterized on this panel as touchy-feely, but what I would say is a much more serious issue than that. If you look at the mashup of the different video of Joe Biden touching various humans, it is uncomfortable. It makes children uncomfortable that you can see them squiggling in his arms or his hands. I think that the media was justified in its coverage of his crossing the line, and I think that we can do better.
And he apologized. He said, you're right.
That doesn't help anybody who was subjected to his handiwork.
Well, it could be argued that if President Trump is on tape talking about molesting women, and actively sexually molesting women, which has happened, and he does get a buy on it, people know about it, and they still elected him president, why should something less, you know, touching people in an uncomfortable way with not any real obvious sexual overtones, injure Biden's candidacy? But you can be sure that this will be talked about more on the Media Project, but that's about all the time we have today, I'm afraid. Thanks to Alan Chartok, Caitlin Brown, and Barbara Lombardo for joining us today. I'm Mike Spain, and thank you for listening to The Media Project.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Judy Patrick is the Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association. And Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening. People, they used to work like hell just for romance, but finally.